Irvine, Washington, Tuesday, February 3rd, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the Senate wrangles over the stimulus bill. We'll talk with Scott Hodge, president of the Tax Foundation, as Republicans offer some specific alternatives to the massive Democratic version of a stimulus package currently being debated in the U.S. Senate. Also in this edition, cabinet drama for President Obama. Tom Daschle withdraws his name as the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. Judd Gregg is named as the next Commerce Secretary. We'll talk about both and more with Christina Bellantoni, White House correspondent for The Washington Times. Plus, the state of the auto industry. On a day when the latest sales figures show doom and gloom for the Big Three, we'll talk with Ed Pieper, Vice President of Chevrolet, about why he's optimistic about his company's future. And the world's worst persecutors of Christians. Jerry Dykstra of Open Doors USA will be with us to go over his organization's latest list on the countries that offer virtually no religious freedom. All that plus Tuesday's headlines follows our discussion with Scott Hodge on the stimulus debate, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is Scott Hodge, president of the Tax Foundation here in Washington. We want to get his thoughts on the existing economic stimulus package now being debated in the U.S. Senate after passage in the House last week, as well as the Republican alternatives that have been spelled out over the past couple of days by the likes of Republican leader Mitch McConnell and Nevada Senator John Ensign. And Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Let's start with the existing package. The price tag is expected to be probably north of $900 billion unless significant changes are made. The House passed one worth about $819 billion last week. As you look at it right now, just how much stimulation to the economy would this package provide?
Zero. But this is what we call a compromise in Washington. That is, one side proposes a huge amount, the second side proposes an even larger amount, and by the time we end up compromising, this thing will be close to $1 trillion, and I doubt if it'll have much stimulative effect. This is really about political stimulus, not economic stimulus. The ironic aspect of this is that for both the House and Senate bill, very little of it will be spent this year. There will be some tax cuts. It's mostly in the form of rebate checks sent back out to taxpayers, and we saw how well that worked last year, not at all. And very little of the spending will actually happen this year. Most of it will happen next year or 2010 and beyond. I think it's really quite ironic that as much as half of the spending in these bills will take place after 2010. And so while a lot of Democrats say we can't afford the Bush tax cuts, apparently we can afford hundreds of billions of dollars of spending after the economic hardship is over.
How do they explain this, Scott? And I'm not asking you to make the case for them, but if all the or most of the money is not even expected to be doled out this year and the tax rebates are brief and not permanent, where's the explanation for how this is going to help us in a major way right now?
Well, you know, the typical Keynesian argument is that when the government goes out and spends and gives taxpayers back a little bit of cash to go out and spend, that it'll somehow increase the demand in the economy, and that'll help churn things along through what's known as the multiplier effect. But the reality is that you have to get the money from somewhere, and essentially what Congress is doing is borrowing prosperity from our kids in the future in order to have it now. And what they're not including in the cost of this bill is the borrowing costs of paying it back. And that could run as much as $200 billion over the next 10 to 20 years in order to pay back the money that we're going to be spending here in the next few years.
Scott, one of the things that has been discussed, not as much as what's actually in the package, is something you just mentioned, the fact that we'll have to borrow this money as we have with other times we've gone into deficit spending, which is most of the time. And there are also countries around the world who we borrow that money from who are having their own fiscal difficulties right now, which means we might have to end up printing our own money, which could lead to inflation. How real do you think that threat is right now?
Well, I'm afraid it's frightfully real, and I think that this shows that Washington right now is operating on panic mode rather than really sitting back and understanding what do we need to do. I think the first thing we need to do is take the small portion of the plans that are currently being debated that would increase unemployment and food stamps and other things that really help people through tough times. That's okay. That I think most Americans would agree with. But ditch the rest. The spending on the Smithsonian Institute or Bridges to Nowhere or energy projects that won't reach fruition until 2024. All of that stuff should be thrown away, and we should start over again and look at what we need to do for the long term. What we do know is that America's business climate is currently very uncompetitive. We have one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world, and yet we're not doing anything to address that problem. And what we know from international organizations such as the OECD in Paris is that corporate taxes are the most harmful taxes for long-term economic growth. So that's the kind of thing that we ought to be addressing. Will it have a stimulative effect tomorrow? No, but it will in the years following, and it'll also make the U.S. more competitive. And those are the kind of approaches I think we ought to be taking, but we're not. We've lined up this litany of congressional largesse, and that is going to have absolutely no impact on economic stimulus.
We're talking with Scott Hodge, president of the Tax Foundation. And Scott, you mentioned the corporate tax. That's something John McCain talked about a lot during the campaign, mentioning frequently that we have the second highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world. Just how big of a cut would make a significant difference there?
Well, to put it in perspective, our overall rate is near 40%, where the worldwide average is down close to 26%. So we would have to cut rather dramatically in order to get our rate in line with the rest of the world. For goodness sakes, you know, China recently cut its corporate rate down to 25%. I think that ought to be our goal, is to at least get our companies on par with what those in China are paying, let alone some of the other countries that have slashed their rates even further. We are so far out of line that it's going to take some heavy lifting to bring the U.S. corporate rate in line, but it's something that has to be done now, because waiting even further is going to make matters worse.
Scott, as you know, Republicans, especially Senate Republicans this week, are coming up with some alternatives they'd either like to see as amendments to the bill or maybe even as an alternative to the bill entirely. Their basic contention is that the tip of this economic crisis iceberg was the mortgage crisis, the housing crisis, and that needs to be the first thing addressed. They want a fixed rate for refinancing backed up by the government. Some say that's a good way to head off the problem. Others say that's government manipulating the system when the market ought to take care of it. What's your view?
Well, I'm a little worried about this approach, because after all, we got into this problem by over-subsidizing housing and encouraging people to buy houses that they couldn't afford. And now Republicans are talking about having super low fixed mortgage rates, which will encourage people to buy houses that they can't afford. So I'm really worried that we're trying to solve the problem with the same approach that got us into the problem. And I think we need to step back and look at this again and just wait for housing prices to bottom out in the same way that we waited for technology stock prices to bottom out after the technology bust. I mean, the market has to correct itself, and too much government intervention can actually create the same problems that got us into this in the first place.
What's your sense of the impact of just waiting at least for a while? We had that kind of rush to a vote on the Wall Street bailout. Now there seems to be kind of a rush to get this done by the middle of this month. What would be the impact of waiting a month or two to see maybe how the economy is heading and also to rethink the components of the bill?
Well, I think it actually might have a positive impact on the overall economy. I think what we're seeing is again, panic policymaking in the same way that they, as you mentioned, they rushed to pass the TARP bill in December, and you can see how little effect that had. I think that this panic spending or panic policymaking is actually detrimental to the long-term health of the economy, and we could use a little bit of level setting here. Take a step back, take a deep breath, because after all, our political leaders are not supposed to panic when things are bad, and yet that's exactly what we're doing. And it's sending the wrong signals to the marketplace and to average Americans. They're beginning to panic because Washington is panicking. If people took a deep breath, stood back and said, hey, wait a minute, let's see if the market can correct itself, it actually might have a stabilizing effect on all of us and keep all of us from panicking too much.
Again, we're talking with Scott Hodge of the Tax Foundation. Our last couple minutes here, Scott. We've talked about some components you think ought to be part of this plan, namely the significant reduction in the corporate tax rates. What other policies, either in terms of tax reductions or targeted government spending that actually would stimulate economic growth, do you think ought to be focused on here?
Well, I think we certainly need to look at the top individual tax rates. Those are the tax rates that are paid most by entrepreneurs and small business people. Those should be cut as we cut the corporate tax rate, because what we want to do for big business, we ought to want to do for smaller and businesses and entrepreneurs. But I think overall we need to rethink our tax system. The taxpayer advocate at the IRS just released a report saying tax complexity is the number one problem facing taxpayers in America. We now spend 7.6 billion hours filling out tax returns, which is having a huge drain on our economic productivity. So tax reform and tax simplification could go a long way toward helping the economy overall, so that we don't have all these wasted resources going to pay tax preparers and accountants and lawyers. We can actually start putting money into productive activities.
What's your sense of how well the public is understanding more recently about exactly what's in this package? Some of the more recent polls suggest a pretty significant downtick in support for the current version of the stimulus.
I think people are tired of bailing people out. They're tired of bailing out Wall Street. They're tired of bailing out General Motors and the auto industry. And they see this as nothing but a big bailout. And really, in many respects, it is, because what Congress is trying to do is bail out industries and sectors of the economy that have behaved poorly and made bad judgments. For instance, most of the states that are now going through hard economic times are states with extremely high taxes, have very high spending, and have had profligate spending, such as New York and California and New Jersey. And all we're going to do is bail out politicians who have made bad decisions at the local level. And I think most people are beginning to say, hey, enough is enough. I don't want to have to pay for this for the rest of my life. And Congress ought to take a second look at this.
Well, Scott, as we've mentioned now, a couple new dimensions to the debate. We'll see how it unfolds here in the next few days. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Greg.
Scott Hodge is president of the Tax Foundation. This is Dateline Washington.